You're listening to The Local Maximum, episode 270.
Time to expand your perspective. Welcome to The Local Maximum. Now, here's your host, Max Sklar.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. You have reached another Local Maximum. Oh my God, I am here on the soundboard today, so I am a little bit shaky, and we're going to have a really good time this episode. First of all, some news. Might not be such great news, but today we do have an announcement.
Is it the Ides of March?
It actually is, I guess, but that's not the announcement today.
Well, what do we have to beware of if it's not the Ides of March?
Well, this is sadly the last episode. Not the last episode of Local Maximum. Don't worry. It's the last episode in this podcast studio because...
Local Maximum Labs North?
Yeah, no. I have to move for various personal reasons back down to Connecticut. And so that will be happening very shortly.
What did you do to get exiled from New Hampshire? or is there a gag order on that? We can't talk about it publicly.
No, I'll be back in New Hampshire frequently.
I know you've already got tickets for Porkfest.
Yep. And I started a new job, so that's good. So we'll talk about all of that pretty soon. Yeah, and I got tickets for Porkfest. I plan on staying up here for 2 weeks actually in June, but I'll also be here before June as well. So some people listening who live in New Hampshire, who know me in New Hampshire, are going to be very disappointed about that. I know. And I guess, you know, when I moved up here, it wasn't, it was during COVID, and I really just had to get the heck out of where I was. And I still like being up here, but for various reasons, it's become time to move somewhere else. And I don't know. It's not like I was feeling when I left New York, where I was like, got to get the heck out of here. Now it's more like I'm getting dragged out of this place.
You're chasing opportunity, not running away from madness.
Yeah, exactly. But the next phase of life is going to be very exciting, actually. I have good reasons to do what I'm doing, which are also very exciting. And so there is a lot of good that comes to the bad. But yes, I'm a little bit sad to be leaving this apartment and this state of New Hampshire, this great state, the free state. And so I'm hopefully going to make it a lifelong goal to come back, whether it's having a vacation home here or just moving here outright, which is what I hope to do at some point in the future. All right. Well, you know what? Since it's our last day in the studio, we're going to have a little bit of fun today. I don't think we really did a lot of in-depth who are we kidding? We can't do a bad job if we tried. We did some research, didn't we? But like, we could just have a little fun today. We've both got a little bit of rum in our coffee over here. And look, we've got matching mugs.
I didn't think we were going to reveal that we were enhancing our performance with illicit substances.
I think that's dragging down our performance. I think that's actually good. But you know what? I was thinking I could just get up and move around the... Now, by the way, maybe the editor can kind of edit out my voice and use the one from the video, but let's look at the studio for a second. I don't know. Okay, so it's we've got here's the full wall that this is actually it's actually lots of wall on lots of wallpaper up top that we didn't use. This is wallpaper. These are not real bricks. We're giving away all the secrets because here's my nice couch over here.
Those of you who are longtime listeners to the Local Maximum will know that in the early days there was footage of the pre-brick wall studio.
Oh yeah, for sure. This is my whiteboard. I'm doing some work on newmap.ai over here.
Super secret.
Here is camera is panning too fast. I'm not a cameraman, folks. I don't know what I'm doing. This is my my lighting. This is the camera that points to Aaron.
Yeah, this is why we need a producer to prevent you from going off script
Look at this. Yeah. Oh, I am totally off script here. Let's see if we can open the door. Oh, I love this painting. This has actually become one of my favorite paintings. I don't really. What is this, rum? I don't really drink rum, except today we're drinking rum, aren't we? But I don't smoke cigars. But I got this in Cuba. I really like this painting.
Don't go much further. You're going to unplug yourself there, Max.
Oh, okay. Well, let's just see if we can just peek into my kitchen here. Oh yeah, here we go. kind of peek into the kitchen. No, I don't think I'll unplug.
Okay. Yeah, famous last words.
Yeah. Also, this does have battery. All right, let me put this down, and then we'll get back to what we're doing. Oh, I also, since I'm moving, I put a bunch of crap on the look at that. Is that a VCR? Yeah, that's a VCR.
It's been a while since I've broken one of those out.
Yeah. Well, I happen to have. Let me get down there. I happen to have a VCR right here. You know what? I don't like the way that this that I set up the angle. We're gonna try this again. All right. Let's move this up.
All right. I think this is thrilling audio, folks.
Thrilling audio. All right. You know what? We're gonna keep it in there, but you gotta keep listening because this is gonna be a fun episode. You could already tell. Come on, this is really different from the previous episodes we've done.
Well, I think this is going to lead into, I may have changed my opinion on our first topic here after that interlude.
yeah, okay. Because the first topic is an article from the New York Times. We're getting increasingly serious in our topics today. We have three topics. So first we're going to have that one. Then, of course, we're going to talk about GPT-4, and then we're going to talk about Silicon Valley Bank, which everyone's talking about. Okay. This article from the New York Times over the past week, would you date a podcast bro? Apparently the New York Times is saying, you know, no, you shouldn't date people who have podcasts. Bad idea.
Well, maybe the most generous read of that article is rather to say that there are many people who would not. We are not necessarily saying you shouldn't, but you would not be alone if you have chosen to make this an exclusion, a red flag in your selection criteria.
All right. Well, neither of us have had problems dating because of the podcast.
I wouldn't use me as a useful data point because...
Because you were already married when we started.
Yeah.
All right.
I have not dated since being on the podcast, and I was married before then, so...
Yes, but you're still married, and... You have two kids, and so it's worked out rather well.
I tried to get my wife to start her own podcast. In pursuit of equality.
Well, she should, and you know she should come on the Local Maximum to gin up support. We can get her started there. If it's like okay, just try to get as many converts as possible to our podcast religion.
Yeah, there was a brief period where she was workshopping the idea of something. I think she was calling it. It was in early days of COVID, and I think she was calling it dispatches from the panic room, but it didn't really get off the ground.
Hmm. All right, dispatches from the panic room. That actually sounds pretty good. I would listen to that. All right, so here's a quote from the New York Times. We can talk about what the New York Times is trying to do for Ms. Robertson. Okay, and these are college students that they're interviewing, I believe.
Mrs. Robinson, are you trying to suggest me?
No, it's Ms. Robertson. See what happens when I give you rum. It wasn't just the content of the man's podcast, but that he had one at all. That was the problem. It wasn't that his podcast was bad, but that he had one. Like many other women, she associates the form with a certain kind of man, one who is endlessly fascinated by his own opinions, loves the sound of his own voice, and isn't the least bit shy about offering unsolicited opinions on masculinity, sexuality, and women. Many women have taken social media to mock just that kind of programming and the men who make it. Well, that is a pretty big statement, and one that also assumes, I mean, you know, there are a lot of different kinds of podcasts. I feel like they're targeting maybe one type of podcast, one type of shitty podcast that kind of exists, but that is not actually that common, or maybe it's more common than I think. I just don't know.
Yeah, it's a depressingly broad brush. I mean, if we were to flip this around a little bit and come up with some alternative versions of the headline, which probably wouldn't be published in the New York Times, but I don't know, is Maxim even still a thing? But if they ran with a headline like, "Would you date a woman with her own opinions?" Or if the opening line was, "It wasn't that she had bad opinions. It was that she had her own opinions at all." Or is it acceptable for your girlfriend to hang out with other women and talk about things she's interested in when she could instead be making you a sandwich? Like, that is the level
misogynistic,
of
misogynistic, obviously. I see this is
blatant misandry in the way that they're posing it. And it it makes me feel dirty to have to say that because that sounds like a line out of some men's rights activist propaganda, which is not my stance.
Yeah.
But this article is so shallow and vapid and like I said, misandrist. And should I be surprised that the New York Times style section can be described as vapid and shallow and misandrist? Or are they simply like I texted you earlier today? Are they just sinking to the level of my expectations continually?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I do know. Yes. So it ends with another quote from this guy, Pang, who does a science podcast. You'd think a science podcast would be more closer to what we do here on the Local Maximum. That wouldn't be the people that we're talking about. He was quoted as saying, "It could mean that you work at This American Life, or it could mean that you record a podcast with a bunch of your friends, talk about the latest week of football games or something like that, or worse, like misogynistic stuff," he said. It's like, why do you have to throw in? Is that something people do? They like to sit around? I mean, well, first of all, there's nothing wrong with making a podcast. That's what this medium is for. Anyone can have a podcast, yes. So if you want to get together and have a podcast to discuss the latest week of football games, what on earth is wrong with that?
You know what the best part about podcasts are?
Yeah.
I don't have to listen to them if I don't want to.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's a great argument from 2003, Aaron, that people don't abide by that one anymore.
Well, the woman who was the kind of opening vignette in this article, it sounded like for several years of her relationship with the aforementioned podcast bro, she did not listen to the podcast, and it was fine. It's like I no longer read my wife's Twitter, and I think that makes me a happier person.
Really? I read her Twitter, actually. It's okay.
I blame that mostly on the fact that Twitter...
It gets you on Twitter.
Got rid of their the capability to follow somebody's Twitter profile with an RSS feed. So it became... It required me to actually go to the website.
Right,
And so that hurdle made me just give up and throw up my hands.
And then you have to read everyone else on Twitter. Right, okay. So, it's a problem. I happen to think there's a deeper kind of hidden agenda of the New York Times. They might disagree with me. By the way, I did an interview with the head of data science at the New York Times. It's going to be coming out in the Local Maximum in a few weeks. And I really hope that he doesn't ask me to rescind the interview because now we're crapping all over the New York Times.
Well, I would be curious to share an adult beverage with him and hear if he has any inside gossip on the New York Times style contributors.
Well,
see if there's some internal conflict there.
I will ask Chris Wiggins the next time I see him. So I think that the hidden agenda is that podcasting is actually the freest medium. Podcasting is the only medium out there that has not seen a significant amount of censorship and deplatforming. And I believe the reason is, first of all, just the structure of the market, how it's so fragmented. But also, look, I mean, you know, Apple Podcasts and Spotify and all these big players who don't host podcasts, but allow you to play podcasts, like, they could, if they wanted to, like, put warning labels on things or take things off, and they have in some extreme circumstances. But I also think it's because the information that you're getting from the podcast is not right in your face. Well, and it's not like everyone can be viral.
And so, interestingly enough, you could see a situation where something like Apple with I guess what used to be iTunes and is now the Apple Podcast Store or Apple Podcast, that if they were the Goliath in the market, which they probably are the biggest player in
Apple
distribution
podcast,
still,
yeah.
But it's not like on Facebook or Twitter where the platform can decide who to amplify and who to deboost or suppress or whatever terminology you want to use for.
A little bit.
They can, but there are so many other venues for distribution and the host doesn't really do that. It's about who gets, you know, promoted in the app. And so nobody's talking about that in the same way they talk about, you know, my tweets were shadow banned. Because if you're interested in something, you can subscribe to it and you get it. And they're not choosing not to deliver episodes to your feed because Joe Schmo's podcast hasn't paid for you know, promotional credits on Meta or whatever. It's even though there is recommendations and there are you know a small number of big players in the podcast distribution arena, they haven't wielded that power in a way that pretty much every other social media network has. And maybe it's because it's not a social media, it's some other type of media.
Yeah.
Even though there's definitely social and parasocial relationships at the heart of a vast majority of these podcasts.
Exactly. There's a whole lot of other things that can be said about this. A couple more bullet points I have about the New York Times is they actually do have a podcast section where they highlight different podcasts. So there are they do have someone in the style.
But are any of them hosted by bros?
No.
Or is there?
Well, I mean, I'm sure some of them are hosted by men, but they're not. they're kind of New York Times approved podcasts. But I really think that they're ignoring the incredible diversity and innovation that has taken place in the podcast space. And no, it's not just a bunch of bros. I know what you're looking at here on the Local Maximum right now today, but it's, first of all, it's not always true in the Local Maximum, and it's not always true. And
for what it's worth, I don't identify as a bro.
Yeah, no, I no longer identify as a bro. No, I never identified as a bro. We're not the bro personality types, if there is one.
Yeah, I mean, it is.
But I'm saying, look, can I just finish my point about, I believe that, like, in the future, there's going to be like a museum of communications technologies, and, you know, podcasting will be, there'll be exhibit about podcasting, and it'll be like, this was the medium that people flocked to where they wanted to be free to innovate without all the gatekeepers. And they're going to have tons of examples. Maybe they'll even have, hey, there's a bunch of like lesser known examples. Like, look at these guys on Local Maximum. I don't know if I can make the museum. Maybe that's a little bit too much to think, but you know, I really think that's what this podiverse is doing here.
Yeah. There's a little bit of schadenfreude involved in looking at them, watching them attempt to gatekeep all the things in a world where being a journalist and that allowing you to automatically get a Twitter blue check no longer has currency. That combined with their kind of weaponizing of the concept of toxic masculinity. Yeah, that makes for a fun time. Good read there.
All right, we're doing some good social. Social commentaries today here on the Local Max. You also have this quote from Mike from Pennsylvania.
Yeah, let me read this one comment I pulled out of the responses there.
Oh,
so,
nice. By the way, the New York Times comment section is hilarious if you've ever read it.
It's like the worst aspects of a cocktail party.
Yeah.
It's like everybody's trying to show off how smart they are, which, granted, any sort of posting on the internet, there's an aspect of that, but this feels like that cranked up to 11.
It's very on brand for the New York Times.
Anyway, Mike from Pennsylvania said, having a podcast is something someone does for fun or as a side hustle, not as a full-time gig, particularly if it's just a podcast with one or two people riffing about stuff and asking for support on Patreon. Ooh. And not creating
other
types of content.
By the way, follow our locals, maximum.locals.com.
Until the point that I just stopped it, I'm like, ooh, this is hitting a little close to home here.
Hey, we're not asking for donations on Patreon. We're asking for donations on Local. And by the way, do it. It's very important. Okay, go ahead.
And not creating other types of content, like a newsletter or interviews with well-known people. And we slip by on that one. At that point, the podcast becomes a company, which I don't mind supporting. So let's draw some arbitrary lines there on declaring your worth.
So we should go talk to Mike. Maybe he would support us on maximum.locals.com because we do interviews with people and occasionally a well-known person. So he wrote here that it becomes a company which he doesn't mind supporting. That it sounds like he's one of our core listeners.
Trolling aside, Mike from Pennsylvania, we can't call you out as a specific individual, but if you are listening and you would like to come on and discuss further, you know, our email inbox is open. You can always come on the Locals and have a conversation with us there. And any of our listeners who think that we've come a little bit out of line here, we're being a little too bro-y. That I didn't put enough rum in my drink, can chime in there.
You know, some guests were former listeners. So we do have people who are guest listeners. We also occasionally we do like a short call-in show or we have guests who like kind of listened a few times.
I hope they remained listeners and did not become former listeners.
Oh, no. Yeah.
They started off as listeners.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So this is a big news week. Aside from that, we were just having a little fun for the first 20 minutes. Sorry, that wasn't the introduction. That was part of the meat of it, right? But you know, so big news week in AI. OpenAI launched its long-awaited GPT-4 model this week, now available on ChatGPT as well, which I have used because I am a paying subscriber to GPT. Got to do it for work. Got to do it for the research. You know. It uses an order of magnitude more transformers. What's transformer? Well, if you think the size of a neural network, it just the bigger a neural network is, the more information it can contain, the more interesting functions, the more complex functions that it can hold. So, now, in a sense, it holds more information, holds more intelligence.
You mentioned you're a paying subscriber. The cheapskate that I am, I am not. But is there a single like level of subscription, or can you be at different tiers depending on the kind of quality of so it's a binary. You're in or you're out.
I think it's like $20 a month.
Okay, so it's not like you can pay more to get, you know, speedier access, more powerful,
more transformers. Well, these are. It's not like. You know, these models are all trained individually. So it's like the GPT-4 is one model that was trained. It probably took months and months to train, lots of money. And then it's sitting there as a model that you can use. Right. So it's kind of like, it's sort of like, I mean, I guess, I don't know, maybe they can throttle it for like certain customers or whatever. But yeah, it would be hard to like try to make it less intelligent, I suppose.
And is unpaid use just limits your interactions or
yeah, I think it just slows you down a little bit. And I think when it's popular, when the service is popular, they throttle you a little bit.
Gotcha.
And also GPT-4, you can use ChatGPT-4. It's multimodal as opposed to multi-model, which when I was at Foursquare, I was building something that I called multi-model approach. And I build a lot of models, but management kept calling it multimodal because I guess they had heard that word before. And so they didn't know to call it multi-model. But anyway, this is multimodal. That means it can not just do text, but images, code, things that are different from text. And so it has different modes of operation. And so it can only generate text. It can't generate images like some of these generative AI systems. But I've noticed that because it can generate text, it can also generate code. And it can generate things like LaTeX and HTML and CSS just fine. So even if it can't generate images outright, how long before it can at least illustrate stuff very quickly by like, you know, building a web page or just rendering an equation or rendering a graph really quickly without having to do any of that fancy image stuff. Yeah, it feels like that's right around the corner.
One of the examples I've seen circulating is somebody who sketched out, I think it was literally on a cocktail napkin, you know, with a ballpoint pen, a design of a website, then took a photograph of that, submitted the photograph to GPT-4 and it created that website, which is pretty slick.
Yeah. Yeah, very slick. A few more headlines from TechCrunch. OpenAI is testing a version of GPT-4 that can remember long conversations. The quote is, OpenAI has built a version of GPT-4, its latest text-generating model, that can remember roughly 50 pages of content thanks to a greatly expanded context window.
Is that the 25,000-word that I've seen tossed around before?
I suppose so, yeah. And the article goes on. Yeah, 25,000, about 50 pages. The article goes on, that might not sound significant, but it's five times as much information as the vanilla GPT-4 can hold in its memory and eight times as much as GPT-3.
Now, I see. So this is the OpenAI... There's GPT-4 vanilla, and then there's the OpenAI version of GPT-4.
Well, no, they're all OpenAI. OpenAI is the company.
Okay.
I'm not sure if it's like if they actually trained multiple models, which I just said before that they didn't, or if it's the same model that they're adding.
Just giving more resources.
Yeah. Like if it's a recurrent neural net, like they can kind of
No, well, I know one of the things that they talked about with GTP3 was that if you interacted with it long enough, it eventually, you know, stuff eventually dropped out the back of its memory buffer.
Yeah. And so that's what's happening when you play tic-tac-toe, I think. And so that's what I tried. And if you remembered when GPT-3 came out, or ChatGPT came out, we were talking about in the program only a few months ago. You know, this has gone fast. By the way, what episode is that? We should probably, we should absolutely link to that episode. That was probably episode 255, The Rise of ChatGPT. All right. So basically, it can't play tic-tac-toe, GPT-3. And it was like adding X's and O's on the board that shouldn't be there. Now, I played tic-tac-toe again, and it didn't do that, but it still declared itself the winner when it didn't actually win. So I feel like it has a slight, you know, it felt like very incremental, like it had a slightly longer window of understanding, but not much. So either eventually this technology just gets so good that it just remembers and you don't have to worry about the fact that it's all, you know, that it's limited, or it hooks into some database that has exact, you know, memory of what's going on. I don't know what the answer ultimately is going to be, but so it failed the tic-tac-toe test. But I know we just watched the GPT-4 developer live stream, and so there are a lot of interesting things you could do with it, particularly in terms of having it generate code really quickly, Python code, website code, JavaScript, HTML. And that, I think, is going to be very useful for me on the job. I think it's going to make me a lot more it's going to make me a lot more productive. The question is it going to replace my job? I don't know. I mean, I assume that for now it's just going to seem like I'm really productive. But then, you know, the companies might be like, well, we don't need to hire that many more engineers. I don't know how that's going to work. So I assume that there is going to be a role in the future for data scientists, for machine learning engineers, for software engineers, for coders, for infrastructure engineers, for data engineers, for all of that. But it's just, what is the nature of your job? It's probably going to be changing quite a bit over the next few years. And I'd like to actually hear about how people think the nature of their job is going to change. So.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of talk with, Stable Diffusion and some of the graphical AI tools that... it's going to make the move for kind of mid-tier artists that may disappear and be replaced by AI prompt generators. You know, people whose expertise is not necessarily in Photoshop, but in manipulating the criteria correctly for talking to something like Stable Diffusion to get the results out that you want.
Yeah, because Stable Diffusion, that's what I was looking at.
That is indeed a skill set, or at least something that you can learn and get better at.
Yeah, and so two points. I mean, the point that I was making before, but now that I realize the word for it is Stable Diffusion because I was fetching for the word, is, okay, how long before it could just render HTML and LaTeX right off the bat? Probably very quickly. And then how long before it just integrates something like Stable Diffusion and you could just do that instantly?
Right. So it's
maybe a few years, but yeah, it's
in the engineering and project world, there's a lot of talk about, you know, defining requirements, which probably will take on a slightly different aspect to it in this context. But the heavy lifting of the project is no longer necessarily the implementation as it is learning how to properly specify what it is you want done.
Yeah.
And then the AI can turn the crank on that as long as you've set up the right requirements.
Think about this. This is an incredibly impactful, incredibly impressive piece of technology that they have here with GPT, because you could almost write instructions like you'd write instructions for a human. And even though it really doesn't understand it in the same way a human does, it gives you very good results. And I've sort of thought of it as kind of like doing research on the internet or doing research on Wikipedia, where it's a great starting place. And sometimes it gives you the right answer right away. But you have to double check things that you see on it. But you don't always have to double check because like sometimes in Wikipedia, you kind of have a sense of, you know, okay, like I know this is right and... this is not life or death and I can just go with it. Or, you know, if you're trying to debug something, like how do I change my account on this service? If you ask GPT that, it'll give you a list of steps. try the list of steps. Usually it works. It's probably better than asking Google at this point, where you might get into someone's YouTube video and then you click the video and they're like, welcome to my video. And why don't you smash my like button? And I'm going to explain some good stuff for you. And then you're like, well, where are you going to, or, you know.
Hey, don't be so rough on the YouTuber bros.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
They need to get dates too.
I'm sorry, but so many people, I bet there are a lot of people listening who understand that.
Ring that bell.
Yeah. But also, like, it also takes you to websites that's like out of date information. Like, no, you just ask GPT, and well, it's better than what's out there.
I think you made an interesting distinction there, yeah. Because it's one thing to say, you know, oh, can you give me a list of steps for how to do task X, rather than saying, you know, ChatGPT, go change my password on this service,
right?
Which I would be a little anxious about letting it run off and go do that. Even if it can do that right 9 out of 10 times, if it does it wrong, that could get messy. Whereas yes. If it's
hook
giving
into
me steps,
my bank account, yeah. ChatGPT, yeah.
Move all my crypto from this wallet to this wallet.
Yes, attach me to an IV and start pumping stuff into my brains, into my veins, not my brain too.
Yeah, at least if we're looking at the steps, then hopefully we can catch anything that looks wonky. But you know, we do that successfully long enough, and we're going to start getting comfortable with you know, kind of skipping that intermediate layer.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So this is very exciting, and because I'm starting a new job, I'm kind of looking forward to trying it GPT first. You know, when I first got into software engineering back in the early 2000s, it was always like people had to explain to me, like, engineers are, you know, and it's almost funny now to think about, because coming out of college, you almost think that like using Google is cheating, and they're like, no, Google is your friend. Use it as much as possible to be as productive as possible. I had to be explained this back in the day.
Yeah.
And now I think we're jumping to GPT and it's like, no, this isn't cheating. I'm going to use this to my best advantage, to just give myself the biggest advantage I can to move as quickly as I can. And I feel like I don't know if I'm any good at it, but I feel like I feel like not using it is worse than using it. So,
well, there's definitely the derisive term, you know, script kiddies, which is kind of the modern equivalent is maybe people who don't really know how to code. They just know how to copy things from Stack Overflow.
Yeah.
But it's the idea of, you know, taking somebody else's code that you don't understand and running it. And that, you know, the old school, tack on that would be, well, that doesn't make you a hacker. You're just a script kiddie. But you know, if a more modern view might be that, you know, if you're getting results, then who cares?
Yeah, it's, you know,
it doesn't matter until it does.
When thinking about copying things from Stack Overflow, the dirty little secret is that we all do it. Now, look, I have kind of I have both a practical and an educational background in computer science, you know, bachelor's degree in computer science from Yale, master's NYU, all that. Does that help? Like, because I actually understand how algorithms work, I've taken many algorithms classes, I've studied algorithms very carefully, I've studied type systems very carefully, but look, there are other aspects of coding that I haven't studied very carefully. You know, for example, you know, some of the infrastructure type stuff I know a lot less than some of the infrastructure engineers. And so I kind of feel like I'm kind of a boot camp guy when it comes to that stuff. So it's like, does the in-depth knowledge, does the theoretical knowledge help you? And I'd like to think the answer is yes. I mean, maybe it's like, you know, sometimes you feel like not so much, although there are people who adamantly say yes and know that it is helpful. But I think they're probably right, but I don't have a great way to think about this.
In a perfect world, you would understand everything at every level all the way down, you know,
yeah.
from soup to nuts, top to bottom. And that would make you better at you know, writing code or whatever implementation it is you're doing. But there's probably a point of diminishing returns there, where in order to accomplish your objectives, it is, you know, for you to write the type of code that you're doing, it is not necessary for you to know assembly or to be able to write it in binary.
Yeah.
Now, if you did, you could probably optimize some more and do things in a more efficient way. But is that gain worth the additional investment it would take to have that level of knowledge and expertise? Almost certainly not.
Yeah, I feel like some of the in-depth knowledge gives you the intuition, the ability to solve problems. Maybe that's the value of the education.
Well, not everybody will have the capacity to be an expert in all things. There's a specialization aspect of that too. That, you know, if you only have a certain number of skill points to invest, you got to pick where to put them.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So lots that can be said about GPT-4. You know, I've been listening to kind of these fun videos online where they have the presidents who, it's almost fun to imagine. It's usually like George W. Bush and Obama and Biden and Trump are like hanging out, and they're all like riffing on each other, but it's kind of like they're still friends for some reason. It's very weird. So in other words, using AI to generate their voices. And like I posted one where they debate Halo. I also saw one before. Maybe I'll try to find it. Where do you know those videos where people are putting like categorizing things into tiers, and there's an A tier and a B tier and a C tier, and then there's an S tier on top. They're like categorizing all the Mario games, and then they were disagreeing, and like, you know, like Trump would be like, "No, that's a terrible game. I don't know what you're talking about." And Biden was like, "No, I think it's an A." And then Obama's like, "You know, we're just going to put this on a C and move on." I'm sorry, I do very bad voices, but you know, I maybe I got somewhat of a cadence, but not the articulation, the timbre. But these are really fun to listen to because I don't have to do the voices. GPT can do it, and it makes a lot of like really fun. You put the one on Dungeons and Dragons here.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of like kind of funny meme material.
Yeah, I haven't looked into how it's created, whether literally all you have to do is feed a script into it and it creates the audio for you, or what level of, you know, kind of tweaking and customizing is being done versus it comes out fully formed. But it's at the point where it is perhaps not trivial, but extremely feasible for people to create audio deepfakes, which are very convincing. And I think they're in a safe zone here because they're doing this on things that are clearly not the actual presidents talking to each other.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, no one's worried that we have misrepresented their views on Minecraft. However, no.
Sometimes like I hear glitches in the AI and I hear the guy's voice who is doing it. But another funny thing is like the voice for Bush is like less.
I don't know if I've seen any Bush ones.
Yeah, it's like. It's the audio is not as good because the training data is on
poor
audio
quality recordings
is less lower quality recordings. I guess it's older recordings. Yeah. So it's kind of funny, in that sense.
But so we are well beyond the point where we should be worried about audio deepfakes of presidents or presidential candidates or any politician saying something that is potentially controversial or inflammatory or whatever. That has arrived. It's in fact been here for a while.
And even video's been here.
The big
here
question
for a while.
Is, when is video going to catch up to the point where it's going to be a real problem? And I think, I've already said that we are going to see that in the 2024 election. It's just a matter of when the big drop comes for that.
I've seen deepfake videos of Obama while Obama was president being demoed to me. So this has been around for a long time, and is probably to get past the point where like it's not glitchy.
But the ones that were contemporaneous with the Obama presidency, those took a fair amount of work and expertise and were kind of in a controlled environment. We're at the point where it's entirely feasible for someone to basically flood the zone with garbage that is of high enough quality that it's difficult to distinguish what's the garbage and what isn't.
I feel like news organizations will be able to tell in 2024, but there might be some good social media hoaxes coming around.
Well, it becomes a question of when are news organizations going to have to restrict their reporting to things where we had an actual reporter on the location who observed this thing and can vouch for the quality of video, and how long will it be before people are willing to pull their this one time where they're willing to take the deep fake and run it and burn their credibility for some reason on it.
Interesting. I don't think that
I mean,
I don't think we need deep fakes to show politicians saying dumb things.
Well, no, the big concern is not so much. I mean, one approach is you use the deep fake to get the politician to say something dumb and you know, impact their reputation and their perception. The other thing you do is that when they actually do say something that they can just write it off and say, well, no, that was a deep fake. You can't prove it was real because I've heard it speculated. How long will it be before you know, there's video evidence of something presented in a courtroom and the defense presents a deep fake of something that appears to have just happened in the courtroom in which they are currently present, that everyone who was there knows didn't actually just happen, but is indistinguishable from the you know, credible video evidence that is being used against the defendant.
Yeah,
And what will that mean? The end of video evidence in judicial proceedings?
I think we're a ways off before it's like forensics proof. Even if we get to the point where, like, you know, okay, could fool some people, which we're not even quite there yet. But it's like with video, I think, at least to someone who's paying attention. But it's like, you know, I think that, I mean, we can get there at some point. I just don't think we're right on the doorstep yet.
It's coming in our lifetimes for sure. Oh, whether it's in the next year or two is an open question.
What if someone is elected president and then you have deepfakes saying this is what the president says we should do? That's an order. So, but the president said no such thing. You could have a deepfake coup.
Yeah.
In a country or in any organization, really.
Well, there was the classic incident of was it Reagan?
Yeah.
Who was doing like basically a mic check before. Going live on television for a speech from the, I think it was from the Oval Office.
Yeah.
And he says, we have just passed legislation outlawing the existence of the Soviet Union. The missiles launch in 5 minutes.
Oh my God.
Part of that accidentally was broadcast.
Yeah.
Now imagine if instead of that being just, you know, a gag in the White House and everyone is immediately, you know, cleaning up that mess. If, you know, the Chinese, put something out like
from
that.
From the Reagan administration.
That, you know, to get it to the right people and time it just right so that, I don't know, maybe North Korea decides it's time to hit the big red button or Iran decides that, you know, balls to the wall, it's time to throw everything we've got at Pakistan. You know, it may not take much injected into just the right moment to nudge things to catastrophe because we've come so close without deep fakes before.
You might have to get like cryptographic signatures on orders all the time we had an episode actually then, and this reminds me of an episode that I've long forgotten on the Local Maximum. This was, I believe, back in 2021. I'm trying to figure out what this is. It was definitely something along the lines of like was it June 2021? It was something along the lines of like how to, oh, here it is.
Was it talking about using library?
No. It wasn't library. That was the one with Jeremy Kaufman. It's episode 167 on WordProof, where it was somebody who wanted to timestamp everything online. And so, and not only timestamp, but maybe you could also cryptographically sign it. And that would kind of say like, hey, if I'm going to give a presidential order, I better cryptographically sign it with something you know I own, and sign the video as well, and sign the video of me signing it, just so that it's like it can't be faked, because in the future, you know, maybe all of that could be faked. So that could be an interesting that could be an interesting idea if it comes to that. We better hope that quantum computing doesn't break encryption, which I have an episode on quantum computing coming up soon.
Makes me think of the nuclear football and the biscuit. But yeah. Anyway, we've gone a little bit afield here.
Yeah. All right. On to the next topic, because I almost forgot about this next topic, and we've been 45 minutes into the show, and I literally just it slipped my mind. Is our banking system falling apart right now?
This is old news. It's like almost 4 days old now, right?
Yeah. Okay. So apparently this is the third story. Silicon Valley Bank Yeah, our banking system almost collapsed over the weekend. Silicon Valley Bank.
Did it start on Friday or was it really
Thursday.
Not until?
I think the FDIC, the government came in and shut down the bank on Friday. Thursday was the start of the bank run. So yeah, this has happened fast. Silicon Valley Bank.
How fast did the savings and loan collapse back in? Now I'm mixing up my banking collapse because savings and loan collapse was what, the 80s?
Yeah.
But then there was the, you know, a collapse that happened.
Lehman Brothers.
Well, I'm thinking back to like the Jimmy Stewart era because that was way before that.
It's a wonderful life.
But yeah, how quickly did those happen?
Probably very fast, because once it starts happening, then there's a panic and you don't really, I mean, that's the definition of panic, is you don't really have time. If people panic slowly, then it's not really a bank run, is it?
Well, I'm thinking less in terms of like, well, that bank fell quickly, but did it spread across the nation quickly, or you know, in a time when communication wasn't as fast, it was contained the contagion?
I don't know. I don't know the answer. I don't know the history, unfortunately. That's a good question. But Silicon Valley Bank, that's the second largest bank failure.
Now, was Lehman the biggest?
History. No, Wells Fargo.
Wells
Fargo. When did Wells Fargo fall apart? I'm trying to remember
And yet Wells Fargo is still around in some incarnation.
Yeah. Collapse. When did that? I want to say 2010, but I felt like it wasn't really a big deal when it collapsed in 2010. Like it wasn't. Because that was after the financial crisis, right? And so, I don't remember when that was. Wells Fargo is still around. So. Or could I be getting the name? No, was it Washington Mutual? I'm sorry.
Ah, okay.
Ah, that's it. Washington Mutual. Oh my God, I'm going to start a bank run on these poor people at Wells Fargo.
Fargo has done enough bad things that they deserve it.
Washington Mutual collapsed in 2008, along with, you know, those other companies like Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers. Lehman Brothers collapsed several times, I believe.
Wasn't one of the Lehman guys on the board at SVB?
I wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, it's a small world. So yeah. I don't think many of the Lehman Brothers folks left the profession. I think they just shuffled around other places.
Right. So the FDIC stepped in and bailed out depositors. The FDIC is it's insurance. They're required to bail out depositors up to $250,000. But because a lot of these were companies and startup companies at that, that have to make payroll, $250,000 is not nearly enough.
And I think technically corporate accounts are not covered by FDIC insurance, but I'm not positive.
So I think they stepped in and covered everybody. And so there's the question of like, is that a bailout? That's kind of a controversial thing.
Or at least they're saying that everybody is covered. I mean, not everybody has gotten their money out, so we don't know if they'll successfully do that.
I thought they got it out this week, but I could be wrong. I guess we didn't do enough research on this one. If the money was locked up on Monday, I think we would have heard about it, because that would have sent shockwaves throughout the system, is what I heard. But I could be wrong with that. Wrong about that. They're not bailing out the owners of the bank. They're not even bailing out the bondholders of the bank, just the depositors. And so, I want to do a little bit more research on that, on what that means. But yes, there are other banks in trouble. Credit Suisse. What am I saying? Like, what am I, French? Credit Suisse, Signature, which is Barney Frank's bank. Barney Frank wrote the Dodd-Frank bill that protected the banks. And then there's this whole blame game going on in terms of what's causing it. The proximate cause seems to be the interest rate hikes that have gone up very considerably. And for the first time in our working lives, we have a significant interest rate right now. And so that means that when these companies bought bonds that pay out a certain amount, well, they pay out money in the future, the value of those bonds have gone down, because now, you know, people can get a lot more money in the future.
I'm no expert on the bond market, but generally it goes in the opposite direction of interest rates.
Yeah, exactly. Other people have said that it's the spillover from the crypto contagion. I believe that Barney Frank said that, which is, in response to Joe Biden, who said it was a banking law from 2018 that seemed to relax some of the provisions from Dodd-Frank, Biden used that to blame Trump for it. And so you maybe know a little bit more about that. It was
I believe there was a change to the ruling that before the relaxing of those regulations, there was a $50 billion threshold where if the bank had holdings in excess of $50 billion, they had to meet certain additional reporting requirements they had to comply with additional regulations. That threshold was bumped up to $250 billion. And I believe it's been reported that Silicon Valley Bank was most likely intentionally, but their holdings were just under that threshold so that they were not required to comply with those additional requirements, which sounds, when presented that way, sketchy. But it is entirely reasonable that if I can do... if I keep my holdings or my income or my earnings under X, I don't have to deal with onerous requirements that have additional costs and overhead required. Whereas if I bump over that, I've got to do all this stuff, which and I don't necessarily have additional gains on my end from doing it. That's entirely reasonable. This gets to one of my pet peeves that what people call a loophole, and I haven't heard anyone talking about a banking or regulatory loophole explicitly yet, but it's very much the same behavior. What some people call a loophole, others can accurately describe as complying with the law.
Yeah. All right. So I think that banking laws sounds like that's just a red herring. That's just so that Biden can say, like, it was Trump's fault. And then, of course, you know, there are people who are blaming, wokeness in the banks. The social justice warrior, like Tucker Carlson, was talking about how one of the risk, or I think the head of, like, risk management at the bank was spending a lot of her time on, on political causes, on social causes. I don't see any evidence that that's what caused the bank to collapse, although I do see evidence that it was probably very annoying for other employees who worked in the bank.
I think that is equally a red herring. But the way it's being dismissed by a lot of people is a little frustrating because while this may not be a zero-sum game, to some extent, every ounce of time and effort that is dedicated to pursuing DEI goals and requirements is not being put towards other objectives. And if that is an important goal and objective for your organization, then that may be a worthwhile trade-off. But to not acknowledge that it is a trade-off is to willfully blind yourself to reality.
Yeah. I mean, I really think, and if it's too controversial, you don't have to be a part of this one, but I want to talk about at some point how much damage some of this ideology that's been injected into companies has caused. I mean, I already have done episodes on it, but I haven't done one that like attacked it dead on, with my thoughts on it. But, maybe I will soon. Anyway, the significance will play out soon enough. I want to also, if I could say I told you so, call back to an episode 157, which ironically was the last episode before I moved up to this apartment.
Before you departed the Isle of Manhattan?
No, I was actually in Connecticut.
Okay.
Yeah. That was the brief moment when I was broadcasting from my parents' basement, like a real podcaster should.
Do we have footage from that era, or did we not
televise
any of that?
I made sure that was absolutely not televised.
So I only saw that through the Zoom video.
Yes, yes. No one will ever see that. But yeah, now it comes full circle. The last week here, that episode was entitled 157, Financial Tsunami on the Horizon. I quote myself, the changes to our financial and economics, and this was in February of 2021, the changes to our financial and economic system is like a tsunami on the horizon. And we see it coming closer and closer to our shore. And we're experiencing some big waves first. And we're like, was that the tsunami? And no, it's like the small tsunami and the bigger one is still out there. So that's going to crash in a few years and we will be along for the ride. If I could use that, if that metaphor has landed properly. And then you responded, well, now I'm truly terrified. So thank you for that. So that was towards the end end of that show. Yeah, since then, we've had kind of runaway bubbles and inflation, followed by high interest rates, followed by all of these like crypto bank runs, not just the price collapsing, which happens all the time, but all of these crypto companies holding people's hard-earned money, just kind of collapsing and locking people's funds. And then now to see that moving into the banking sector itself is kind of scary. I feel like we are experiencing this tsunami, and I don't know if like a true bank run is going to be allowed to happen, but some domino is going to fall somewhere. I feel like the other shoe is going to drop. I'm still terrified.
I was not worried until on the drive over. I was listening to another podcast on a not completely unrelated subject, but not focused on this explicitly. But it triggered some thoughts on my end, and I was actively considering, you know, should I maybe go to the bank and withdraw, you know, just under $10,000 so that I have a significant amount of cash on hand, because right now I've got, you know, like what, maybe $50 in my wallet. And if for some reason my bank went down, even if the money, you know, maybe wasn't gone, but if for some reason I couldn't access it for a couple of days, what am I going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. Move to crypto. That's what. All right. So I think that's good enough. Now let me see if I can get the right animation, or not animation, if I can get the right, if I can get
you got a 50-50 chance, and either way, it's going to be entertaining.
All right, let's go to the segments.
And now, the probability distribution of the week.
All right, the probability distribution of the week.
You've chosen wisely.
We're just having a crazy old time here. We don't have time for very complicated distribution today, do we? And because we're doing continuous distributions, and we've already done some of the simple ones like uniform, whatever. We're going to talk about the exponential distribution. I think that's pretty straightforward, right? It's just like e to the minus ax, it all has to integrate to one, but it's basically the support, once again, is positive numbers. So you're picking a positive number, and probability of the probability density of any given number as you get higher and higher has an exponential decay on it. And that works because if you find the area under the curve off to infinity, that's a finite number. So that works. I should also point out it's the basis for a lot of stuff. So we talked about the gamma distribution last time.
Was that our most recent? It's been a while since we've done a distribution. Or I guess you did at least one solo.
In episode 268. So that's when I did the gamma distribution. So this is actually a special case of the gamma distribution. So it's a special case worth mentioning. And also, it's kind of not a special case, but a building block of the Laplace distribution. So the Laplace distribution is, you know, I would say, you know that the normal distribution is kind of like a bell curve, right? Like a bump. The Laplace distribution takes an exponential distribution and kind of like reflects it over the line, so it kind of copies it. So instead of a bump, it kind of crests up to like a point on the wave, and it could be used as another form of like a normal distribution. You know, it's got like it has very different properties from the normal distribution, but it has actually some similar properties. They're both short-tailed. They both are unimodal, have very well-defined mean, standard deviation, all that. And so that's the Laplace distribution, and we could talk about that another time as well, like what it's used for, because actually has a very big use in machine learning. Exponential distribution, I think, is pretty straightforward. It's the continuous version of the geometric distribution in discrete, where it's like each step is half as likely. And you could use it in several ways. You can use it, you know, if you make the exponent, it could scale up in several different ways depending on what that rate of decay is. So if that rate of decay is very high, then this distribution has a very small variance, and all of your all of your probability distribution is very close to zero. So right. they're all positive numbers, but they're very close to zero. But if you make that decay very, very low, you could actually create distributions that's almost like uniform on the, like if you make the rate of decay, like for every unit, I don't know, like e to the point, instead of e to the x, it's like e to the, well, what would be, well, let's talk about half-life here, right?
Okay,
yeah. Maybe that's an easier one.
Well, yeah, because you already, you mentioned decay, right. which of course implies half-life.
Right, so it's half-life of the probability density. So, you know, let's say you have some value that you expect to be a certain order of magnitude, like maybe you think it's going to be in the thousands or whatever. If you set the half-life at like a billion, you can get something that's almost like a uniform distribution over the positive numbers, except in this case, it will still integrate to one. Hmm. So you'll still be able to use it. So you can, so, I mean, there's actually a way to consider a uniform distribution over all positive numbers, but that's kind of like controversial. That's like an improper distribution. But like, if you don't want to use that, you can kind of use the exponential distribution as like a poor person's uniform. I was going to say poor man's, and then that's, I felt like that was sexist in some ways, but now I realize that it's also like classist because we're saying poor. I don't want to, maybe I can't use that phrase anymore. Okay, well.
It is the frugal person's.
Yeah, it's the frugal person's. We're getting very politically correct here.
Have I complained to you yet about how we use Microsoft Teams at work for our
I'd
our
love to see what the tie
chat
is.
Software.
Yeah.
So a few months ago, they rolled out a new feature that's called Speech Coach.
Okay.
So when I'm in a meeting, it basically records and analyzes everything I say, and it'll give feedback on things such as, you know, you've got a lot of filler words. You're saying, you know, and like, and you know, a lot. And it'll count how many times you say each of those.
Well, thanks for not telling me as we use the podcast.
but the other thing, one of the things that it calls out and that made me really raise an eyebrow the first time I saw it is it will ping you for non-inclusive language. So if you're in a meeting, you say, okay, guys, listen up.
I've done that.
It'll take note of that, and it'll say, "Oh, you used gendered phrase 4 times in that 30-minute call."
Did you see the Slack bot? There's a kind of a famous meme going around where somebody writes on Slack, like, "Guys, the elevator's stuck. I'm stuck in the elevator," and it's like, "Oh no, you said guys, we're not going to send this out."
No, I have not seen that.
Although, yeah, something like that.
So.
But anyway, what does this have to do with exponential distribution? Why am I injecting my woke ideology?
We were talking about the poor man's.
Yeah, I know. I said anyway. All of a sudden earlier I was against the so-called woke ideology, and now all of a sudden I am injecting it into my own podcast.
Well, I will say that gamifying it has at least a subconscious, if not a conscious, impact.
It has. All right. Do you have anything to add about the exponential distribution?
I like half-lives. I think it's interesting that
I feel like I wrap my head around.
If
this
we
one.
Go back to not the beginning of the podcast, but the beginning of the pandemic, everyone was talking about exponential growth this and exponential growth that. We hear less about exponential decay, which is its.
Also, I guess
it's lesser known sibling, but
yeah,
important in many venues.
Right. Yeah, and so if you pull numbers from this, what does it look like? I mean, there, you know, I guess all of the exponential distributions kind of look the same if you just scale them a little differently. They're all kind of the same shape, so you're going to kind of just get. You know, you're just going to get denser and denser as you go to zero, but there's some starting density and some half-life. So I don't know how else to describe it, but I feel like this is a very intuitive one, which at this time of night is a good one to end with.
Well, so is there a kind of classic, typical example of a case where the exponential distribution is very representative of a particular behavior?
I think it's a very good,
we already mentioned half-life, but
yeah, well, I think like, if you go back to the gamma distribution, when trying to come up with like a distribution about around a rate of something, a gamma distribution is often a very good prior. And because an exponential distribution is a special case of that. I think that that is also a very good prior for rate. I don't have a good example other than, you know, if you know something is not, if you know something like, if you know the probability of something kind of decays as you go further and further into the future, then exponential distribution is probably a good one. In fact, the decay of particles, probably a great one. Let's say you don't even know what the half-life for a particle is. Maybe you even want to use an exponential distribution to, or actually an exponential distribution, you know what the half-life is, but you want to kind of see how long that particle is going to last. It might be look something like that. That could end up being a different distribution, but I'm pretty sure there's an exponential distribution in there somewhere. I'd have to
take
the equation.
Yeah, I would have to expect that.
Yeah. So I'm doing it off the, but I suspect there are a lot of physical quantities that that obey this one for sure. It could also be like the distances between events, possibly. I don't know. All right. So I wish I had more to say about that. But look, this is a huge episode. One of the most fun in recent memories. All right. I think it's sad to say that we are coming up towards the end of the show. It's been a little more than an hour, so pretty perfect. Do you have any last thoughts about today's episode, Aaron, and what's our overall theme?
Yeah, I'm going to miss the studio. It's been a week, full exciting and possibly terrifying news in on all fronts, whether you're a podcast bro or you have money in a bank or you're worried about the AI apocalypse. So hopefully next week is a little less interesting in the style of the classic Chinese proverb.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if it's less interesting, then we'll have less fun stuff to talk about on the Local Maximum. I mean,
I'd like occasionally for our current events focused episodes to be less about panic.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
I mean, we're also discussing this in a calm fashion, but
we shouldn't be rooting for the world to fall apart just so we have podcast material. That's probably the wrong approach to life, I would say.
Reporting to you live from the edge of the fiery crater.
Yeah. All right. So appreciate everyone listening. Remember to subscribe to the Locals, maximum.locals.com. We are going to send an email soon to my entire email list about the fact that we've been doing this for over 5 years. And in fact, I don't know if we have any milestones coming up in terms of like number of maybe total number of downloads or whatever. We're not really at a big round number, but I suppose in like a year or so we'll be at 500,000. That would be a cool number. Oh, wow. I think we're at 380,000 all time. But that's a lot if you think about it. This is a small size city. Listen to us.
Well, and I know, Max, that you've got a bunch of exciting episodes already lined up for the next couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah.
If you're listening and you did not like the topics we covered today, send us an email or post something on the Locals and tell us what we should be talking about.
Awesome. No, I was surprised by the number of people who really liked when I talked about Multi-Armed Bandit. Like, this audience really likes when I get into like a very nerdy technical topic. And so
you have a type.
Yeah, well, you know, I was very happy to get that feedback, because sometimes I talk about those things and I'm like, well, I don't know if anyone's going to like this, but apparently people do. So, all right. I guess we'll call it a show and maybe take some pictures. Okay, come on. I guess we will adjourn this meeting of the Local Maximum until next time, when I guess you'll interview me about... next week, actually, I'm going to be interviewing someone who works at a company with a big office in Connecticut called ASML. And you might have heard of that. You might not have heard of it, but it is a company that does... hardware, semiconductor manufacturing. And so that is kind of a different side to all of information technology. all, up to and including the current AI boom.
Critical component underlying everything.
Yeah, underlying Moore's Law. So that is going to be a very interesting episode. And then hopefully the week after, maybe we could do a remote episode where you interview me about all the new things that I'm up to and where I'm living and all that. So tune in a couple of weeks. And then I have tons of interviews lined. And also, I hope you enjoyed Susan Conover last week, who was...
Oh, yeah, that was a fun one.
Yeah, on health AI. So we've got a lot of really, really kind of like entrepreneurial scientific people coming up on the Local Maximum in the future. So
I wish my job evaluation was done on the basis of, what was it, top 375%? Like dermatologists?
Oh, yeah.
That'd be a great criteria for my evaluations.
Yeah, yeah. No, I hear you. Yeah, so I really liked that one. And I also really liked going to their party when they announced
their
Massachusetts.
Their launch party. Yeah, that sounded cool.
So that was actually the last, one of the nice things about living here is you could just drive right into Boston. And unlike New York, Boston is a city you could just kind of drive in and drive out. I never thought of Boston that way because when we were growing up, it was all construction. But you actually can do it. It's actually not like if I had to drive into Boston tonight and then drive home, it'd be like for dinner, like it'd be fine. Whereas
parking might be a pain in the butt, but
it's not.
The rest
it's really
of it is
not.
Doable.
It's not that bad. I mean, the worst is it could be a little expensive, but Boston expensive is like 20, 30 bucks.
Well, yeah, you've anchored on...
on New York, where like...
On a rougher market there.
Yeah, exactly. So... all right. So bottom line is exciting and terrifying. I don't know if we'll name that show that but that's the theme of the show. And
the Local Maximum, an exciting and terrifying experience.
Yeah. And a lot of exciting ones coming up. All right. I think that's it. I don't have any last thoughts. All right. Other than that, have a great week, everyone.
That's the show. To support the Local Maximum, sign up for exclusive content and our online community at maximum.locals.com. The Local Maximum is available wherever podcasts are found. If you want to keep up, remember to subscribe on your podcast app. Also, check out the website with show notes and additional materials at localmaxradio.com. If you want to contact me, the host, send an email to localmaxradio@gmail.com. Have a great week.
Feel the power.